Let's try that again. Here we are, 15 days, we are the Omer, Chodesh Tov, we're holding now on Daf Vov. Today's Daf is Daf Vov. Daf Zayin, Daf Zayin, and we got, we're a little bit behind. We got up to the two dots, and we didn't even hit the middle of the page, or one line above the middle of the page, on Amid Beis. Omar Mar, Im Hotzi V'Ichnis B'Shogeg Chayav Chatat V'Meizid Anush Karet V'Niskal. So now, the question over here, as we said yesterday, we had a braita that described the putative four Yeshuyas of Shabbos, which we saw were really variative. If we include the variations, we ended up with six Yeshuyas of Shabbos in terms of dinim. But in any event, that it said over there, for some reason, besides defining what is Rishut HaRabim Gamur, it also said over there, so it also mentions at great length the din of Chiyav Chatas, of Chiyav Karet, of the din of Bishogig. I mean, there's no Chiddush in all of this. I mean, Pshita, what kind of Chiddush is this? What, Bishogig Chiyav Chatas? And obviously, the Chiddush is B'mezid Onush Karet V'Niskal, which is weird. We need to know that on a Hutzah from these Rishuyot, you would be Chiyav Karet and could get Skila with Kabbalat Hatra'ah. Well, I understand. Hanami Pshita. I need a Mishnah to tell me that. That's a pasuk. It's not so partial to see. Because what's interesting is we saw already Hotza'ah has a very special dinner. Because of the fact that it's a Malacha Gru'ah, and we need to source every last aspect of Hotza'ah. It happens to be that there's a very strange and mysterious Megillat Sitarim. I found a hidden scroll in Reb Chiya's Beis HaMedrash. Now, this is not really quite as mysterious as it sounds, because before the Heter to write down Torah Shebaal Peh, which has now become somehow a blanket Heter, which every fool could write down his Haoras and publish them and so on and so on, but it used to be that you basically kept to the Torah had to be Baal Peh, and if you wrote it down, it was a terrible sin, because it was a violation of the whole idea of what Torah Baal Peh is meant to be. However, as the Rambam explains, individuals would keep notebooks for themselves, for Chazorah. The only issue is to define the Torah Baal Peh and then to teach out of your notebook. To keep a notebook personally to help your memory is not a problem. It's not a violation of Torah Baal Peh. However, such books were kept private. That's called Megillat Sitarim. It doesn't mean a mysterious scroll. It simply means it's a notebook, a private notebook, in Reb Chiya's Beis HaMedrash, in which someone wrote down what they had been mekabel from Isi Ben Yehuda, and they wrote, Isi Ben Yehuda Omer, Avot Melachot Arba'im Chaser Achat, Ve'ino Chayav Ela Achat. Now, in these notebooks, in order to avoid people one day using them. Now, anybody here read A Canticle for Leibowitz? Yeah. All right. So what happens over there is somebody finds a shopping list from the 1900s. This is after nuclear war and so on. It takes, you know, whatever, how many thousands of years to get back into shape. Somebody finds a shopping list, and they end up actually viewing this as the most sacred relic that they have, and they have all kinds of yeshivas trying to figure out, so what's the meaning of 3 dozen bagels? And so, you know, so you never know what happens to Megillat Sitarim. So as part of the Megillat Sitarim, that it shouldn't become a source now of learning, they would also write in very cryptic ways, that the person who wrote it would remember his notes. But you couldn't quite figure out, unless you were awfully bright, in which case it was Torah Baal Peh anyway, because what it wrote was just a trigger. So it said over there, and you're only chayev on one of these malachot, which, I mean, what is that supposed to mean? You're only chayev on one, ain't he? I mean, that's not, it's a fair submission of both malachot, arboim chaser achat. And you know that the whole point of listing the various malachot is, as the Gemara said over there, what's the point of telling me a number? Whatever they are, they are. I mean, Havinam Baminyan Alamali. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, the point is that the Mishnah is bringing out to you the fact that Ima Sa'an Kulam Ba'alei Mechat, Chayav HaKol Achat V'Achat. That if, in fact, you did each one of these melachot without remembering in between that the thing that you had just done was a melacha, it's not talking about you forgot Shabbat, because then you wouldn't be chayav one. But so you did a bunch of melachot. As a matter of fact, the Gemara asks, so how did you know it was Shabbat if you don't know any of these things are melachot? So what's the Shabbat? So it's a Be'al HaMechad. And if you remembered and then forgot that it wasn't Be'al HaMechad. So it's okay, you remember with Shabbat in terms of Tchumim. You know, there was a din of Tchumim. Okay. It's also a Shabbat. Some element of Shabbat. But in any event, you could do all 39 melachot to be chayav 39 chataot. I mean, certainly whoever wrote this Megillat Sfarim did not mean to run against the normative approach of the Mishnah, which everybody knows, the Lamed Tes Melachos of Shabbos. Therefore, what would he have meant when he said, Eino chayav ela achat? He must have meant, Elohima eino chayav al achat mehem. There's one of them that although you're chayav b'shogeg, a korban, you would not be chayav skila on the mezid. Now, the first thing that pops into your mind is that hotza'ah is a melacha gruah. That's probably a unique case. Comes along now the braita to say, don't make that mistake. The chiddush is, indeed, b'mezid anush karet v'niskalit strichalei. That is a chiddush. That you would be chayav even skila, hakamashman ha mihanach talo misapka. That actually hotza is not one of those things about which we have a suffix. By the way, some bring this even nogea la halakha. Because let's say you have a choice of chilul Shabbat for a chola. So you need to do something. Now you can either cook something or you can bring something from Rosh Hashanah Rabban that's already cooked, let's say. Which one is better to do? So according to this, you know that this is one of the chomer ones, hotzaas. Cooking, maybe that's the one that you'd be puzzling on. So maybe it should be at least a suffix that it's more kedai to do the cooking than it is to do the hotzaah. Anyway, I mean, it's not, it's one of these cute achreinish discussions. But it's just, it's interesting that we could find the possible nafkaminas. Omar Mar, now getting back to the cases, remember we were going through step by step. Okay. So first we discussed the meaning of these four rishiyot. And then, and how come, we discussed how come you don't list the others. And then we discussed why does it say that you're chayev, that we know that you're chayev. We wanted to know also the diuk in lashon, why say gemura, why does it say zuhi. But about the actual words that he said, he listed in the lists of karmelit, he lists a karmelit. That's a little bit silly. You're saying a yam and a bika and a stavnit and a carmelite are not like the shutayok and not like the shutarabim. They are carmelites. What is the? How can you list the thing itself in the set of the things that it's supposed to be? Boy, this would have driven Bertrand Russell out of his mind, this Gemara. So, what's the pshat? Says the Gemara. So we've got a number of different issues here. First of all, we've got that listing of the karmelit, which is maddening. And then we've got this bika business. And a bika, we mentioned yesterday, we start to get to an area in which the use of a thing, remember we noted that the midbar, it really depends if people are using the midbar or not. So the area that's in use is called the Shutarabi. Now this bika, because of that, is also very confusing, because you list bika, first let's talk about that before we get to the karmelit. But that's not true. Because there's a Beferish Mishnah that says, you're telling me Bika, Eina Lok Rishut HaYachid V'Lok Rishut HaRabim, it says Beferush HaTznan, HaBika'ah, and now a Bika'ah, normally the meaning of a Bika'ah is the fields on either sides of the valley. So you have a road going along, and then you have the fields, people are usually walk through the fields. But it says here, L'Gabi Tuma, and we mentioned that that's the area in which there's a chafifa of the concept of Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim to certain elements of Shabbat's Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim. And indeed, the Mishnah makes this implication, it's Mishnah in Taharot, HaBik'ah B'Yemot HaChamah, during the summer, a valley, while it's a Rishut HaYachid for Shabbat, is called a Rishut HaRabim for Tum'ah. The only meaning of Rishut HaRabim for Tuma is in the question that is learned from Sota about Suffik Tuma. Since the Torah keeps insisting on calling a woman who was alone with a man a Suffik Tuma, V'nitma'a or lo nitma'a, so we call that a type of Tuma. The Gemara learns from there, and actually it's all discussion. Tosas is really halacha l'mashmi. We see now we're learning it directly. Which elements we're learning from Sota? But as we saw back in Nida, Suffik Tuma B'Rishut HaRabim is considered to be Patur. Why is that? Because the only point where the Torah says Suffik Tuma is Asur for the Sota is where V'hi Nistara. Now V'hi Nistara means, by definition, there's two people, him and her. Once there's three people, it's no longer Nistara, which teaches us that if you have an area which is open to the public and which people are walking through, that becomes a mokom of a Rishut HaRabim, so to speak, in terms of Tuma. And if you have a suffix about whether you encountered Tuma there, then it would be Lakula, because the Torah was only Machom on the Seita in a case where she was Nisteret. Okay, this again is a rather strange kind of idea, but we use the same word Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYachid there. So during the summertime, a Bika being a place where people can walk through, is considered to be Rishut HaRabim Latuma, and therefore there would be a Suffik Tuma, would be Tahor. But B'Yamot HaGeshamim, when things are muddy and nobody is walking through the fields, then it becomes Rishut HaYachid L'Kach U'L'Kach. It has the din of Rishut HaYachid both in terms of Tuma and in terms of Shabbat. Now, you just said that a Bika is a Karmelit, and here it says it's Rishut HaYachid. Omar Ula, the Mishnah isn't coming to describe the technical dinim of a Bika in terms of Karmelit Rishut HaYachid. He's trying to say that while in certain contexts, such as Tuma, it can be Rishut HaRabim, it's never Rishut HaRabim for Shabbos, that's all. Meaning it's a Karmelit, but the point is it's not a Rishut HaRabim. I don't need to talk about in Masechet Taharot whether it's a din of a Karmelit that's not a Rishut HaRabim or a Rishut HaYachid that's not a Rishut HaRabim. I call it a Rishut HaYachid because it's not a Rishut HaRabim, that's all. So lo'olam Karmelit havia, indeed it is a Karmelit. But my korel of Rishut HaYachid, mafish eina Rishut HaRabim. And in that context, it's irrelevant. I mean, we're trying to basically contrast it to the din of Suffik Tuma Rishut HaRabim. So we say, in terms of Shabbat, it's never Rishut HaRabim. That's all. It's just a cute way of setting up a mission. Ravashi says, I don't like cuteness. There's got to be an explanation as to why it's Rishut HaYachid. Now, we know the alternative. The alternative is that a Bika could be a Karmelit. A Bika could be a Karmelit. Yesterday. Isn't today Chesed Shabbat Tiferet? Isn't it Chesed Shabbat Tiferet? Thanks, Reed. Seems good. Anyway, yeah, so we know the answer, because there's a type of Karmelit, which is really Rishut HaYachid, which has a din of a Karmelit, and we talked about yesterday, that really there's these other two Rishuyot, as Tosas pointed out, that are being subsumed in the category of Karmelit, even though they really aren't a Karmelit. One of them was a Chotzer that doesn't have an Eruv, which is really Rishut HaYachid, but you're not allowed to carry Arba Amasir just as if it's a Karmelit. And the other is, we had before, the Karfaf, which was the wide area that is surrounded by Mechitzot. But since it's not Mukaf L'dira, such as this valley, which may have fencing to prevent people from just breaking through anywhere in there, if it has fencing, then it would still be a Karmelit, but it's really a Rishut HaYachid. It's a Karmelit only L'chumra. It was one of the reasons why we weren't so happy with really including it under the term Karmelit, because it's so misleading. It isn't really a Midiraisa, Rishut HaYachid. Normally, a Karmelit Midiraisa is a Mokum Patur. Okay, this is one of the unclear elements in the technical language of Hilchos Shabbos. So therefore, comes on Rav Ashi to say, look, I don't believe that we call it a Rishut HaYachid because it's not a Rishut HaRabim. I mean, even though it's in the middle of Masechet Taharot, you still have to keep your language correct. I mean, so the idea over here is, in fact, it's talking about a Rishut HaYachid, meaning Rishut HaYachid Dioraita. Okay? So it's talking about going to eat La Mechitzot. It has now Mechitzot around it. And therefore, technically speaking, it's a Rishut HaYachid. The reason that we call it a Karmelit is because you're not allowed to carry in this Rishut. That's good, because usually you'd be too sleepy. Look, if you've got something that is larger than an area of a time, remember that there's the interesting way that we measured the property was by a normal, what's considered to be the standardized area in which you could plant a bag of seed that was two saw. Here, this would be the case over here. So you plant a bushel. It's called a bushel plot. You could plant a kur. It's called a kur plot, and so on. So here it's a plot in which you could have a bag full of seed of tusa. The place in which you could plant that, if the karfaf is larger than that, and it wasn't made to live in, there's no house and nobody's living in the area. And, you know, I don't care how big it is. I mean, it'd be a kur, for that matter. It'd be 20 acres. The idea is that if it has mechitzot around it, the fact that it's enormous doesn't change anything. It's still a Rishut HaYachid in terms of the Oraita, and HaZorek L'Tocho is always going to be chayav. My time of mechitzahi, there's no problem in the dinim of mechitzot, which is the sole criteria when it comes to the Oraita definition of the Rishut HaYachid. The problem is only the Rabbanan, Shemechuseret Diurim. There's nobody living in it, and the Rabbanan insisted that the level of Diur is also integral to the understanding of the Rishut. So if there's too many diurin, you can't carry in it unless it has an Erev. If there's no diurin, you can't carry in it because it's similar to a space that's not being used for private purposes. It's similar to Rishut HaRabim. Okay? But in terms of the Mechitzot, there's one halacha, it's Rishut HaYachid. Hey, now wait, this is really weird because this is Ula who's quoting Rabbi Yochanan over here, right? Ula was the one who said on our days, on our Ula, the reason we're calling it a Karmelit is because it's not a Rishut HaYachid, not a Rishut HaRabim. I mean, if it's Ula's own statement that there exists another type of Karmelit, which is called a Karfah, Shloh, Kapha, Dirah, for heaven's sakes, he's got it right up his sleeve. He's got the answer. What does he have to say, this weird answer, that since it's not a Rishut HaRabim, we call it Rishut HaYachid? I mean, that's not satisfying. So he's got the satisfying answer himself. He's the one who quoted Rabbi Yochanan. Why didn't he say it? So Bishleim Ravashi, okay, well, I'm not getting Ula. I mean, for whatever reason, it does hold of Ula, with the Noah Ula, whatever. But Ula should have said his own pshat. My time alone, Kishmatate. Why didn't Ula explain the sugya in the Braita according to the very Shmu'ah that he had learned from Rabbi Yochanan? Amar Lecha. Ula said, because let us have some responsibility to semantics. Don't come teaching me what's called Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim. I can tell you that a bika with a fence around it ceases to be a bika and becomes a tennis court. So you don't call it a bika, you call it a karfaf. That's the technical term for it. So either yitla mechitzot bika karile, karfafi. Whereas Rav Ashi says, look, man, it says Rishut HaYachid. It doesn't say non-Rishut HaRabim, okay? So I don't know what your makbet on the wording of Karfaf and Bika. I'd rather be makbet on the wording of Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim versus Karmelit. If you're dealing with semantics, then let's go all the way.
Yeah. Yosem Beit Sassayin, Shalohukav Ladir is Chayav.
No, the Chiddush isn't that it's Chayav. The Chiddush is that it's a Rishut HaYachid. That's what we're talking about over here. My Taima, the statement of Rabbi Yochanan puts it in terms of the Chiyav, that it doesn't matter how large it is. But the idea is, we're taking for granted. But of course, I know you look at this as if it's a Rishut HaRabim, but it isn't. I don't care how big it is. It's never going to lose its din of Rishut HaRabim. It's going to be Rishut HaYachid. Don't tell me just because it's a whole island, but therefore it's a Rishut HaRabim. Does it have a chitzot? Of course, you start running into a little problem with continents there. But
because
it's a Rishut HaYachid. So since it doesn't have people living in it, which the Rabbanan have viewed as important, so therefore you won't be able to carry in it, but it still has mitzvot, and it's clearly a real Rishut HaYachid.
Even a real big one.
Yeah. The question is, how big is big, as I say? I mean, what about Hawaii? What about Australia? I'm assuming that the continental shelf is a fast enough drop-off. That's not the case in many places. There are cities that use the continental shelf as part of their Eruv, as I'm sure you know. Yes, that's one of the interesting Eruvin issues. The drop-off, is it sufficiently... We'll see what the shear is in the drop.
You can see it.
Yeah, that's right. So, continues now this sugya. HaKarmelit. Now the other thing that bothers us is including the word Karmelit in the set of Karmelits. Oh man. Oh, to kulo nami lav Karmelit? You know, I thought that's what we're coming to explain. All the cases that we had were Karmelits. So what kind of Karmelit is included in the set of Karmelits? The Asr Dimi Rabbi Yochanan, we are talking here about another type of Karmelit which is meant to be included in this Karmelit, which is a little bit strange. It's defined as a Karmelit only because of limitations of use. And of course, we already met this idea when we talked about carrying from the store into the street through the corridor. That was the case in which there was an area between Rishut HaYachid and the true Rishut HaRabim, where it wasn't all that easy to get to have the flow of the Rishut HaRabim going through, because things were put
between
there.
The stores and the columns.
What?
Between the stores and the columns on one side of the street, the path running in front of the stores.
No, you're talking about under the roof, under the awning, Bivlar wouldn't have it in a Rishut HaRabim. It's not because of the awning, it's because of the obstruction. The awning, anyway, we know that a Rishut HaRabim Mikura does not have a dinner because Ein Adome L'Digle Midbar we had earlier. That's a separate issue. Rishut HaRabim cannot have a defined ceiling. Fine. So this is coming to tell me the case. Yasser Adimi, he quoted Rabbi Yochanan as saying, Lo Nitzcha Elo L'Keren Zavit Asmucha L'Rishut HaRabim. Now there's two possible types of Keren Zavit. So Keren Zavit can be an indentation in which you had an individual who took his home and wanted to create a little parking space in front of his home. He moved the wall of his house inwards to leave parking in front. But what has actually happened is that the street now has this area in which it indents inwards along into the wall of the other homes. This is a pretty common kind of thing. And although people generally will not use that area, because it's inconvenient, I mean, you go in and then you have to go out again, so to speak. But again, as you well know from your own experience, when traffic is heavy, it's a great way to get ahead. You had Badafka go into the side, you run around the other people, and you go ahead. So you look for those kind of turnabouts and so on the side of a road. So there, even though it's parked, even though in heavy traffic people will go into that indentation, what's fascinating is that even though it's really part of the street, but it isn't usable the way people use the rest of the street, that is the remez of a new type of Karmelit that's included here, which is restricted flow. A restricted flow Karmelit is a whole new idea. Now, of course, the other idea of a Keren Zavit could mean a house that is built at an angle. and it juts into the Rishut HaRabim, which you often find in these castle-like affairs, in which when you come to the edge, you're going to have to walk around the piece that's sticking out. So anything that's headed towards that corner is not convenient, because who wants to walk there? I'd rather avoid that whole little piece. Once the angle starts angling in towards that corner, I avoid it. So, but it's the same idea. So that's a literal Keren Zavit. So again, since it's not Lecha Tashmish Teh, so we're talking about a restricted flow in the middle of Rishut HaRabim, right here on the side of Rishut HaRabim, is considered to be a Karmelit. Actually, the simplest thing would have been, you would think, would have been to say, Tzidei Rishut HaRabim. What do we need this case of Keren Zavit? Since we saw already yesterday, there exists an idea of the edges of Rishut HaRabim, which is itself a restricted flow. I mean, isn't that the simplest case? So Tosa says the reason we didn't want to say that that's the case is because that was a machlokas. As we saw before, we didn't know how far Rebbe Eliezer, when it said Tzidei Rishut HaRabim, is considered to actually, yes, be a halach of Rishut HaRabim. So we don't want to get into that. So okay, so we took a case in which we believe everybody would be moda, and that's the case of a Carmelite of real restricted flow where you're going to end up bumping into a wall if you keep walking in this area. Kiyas Rav Dimi Am Rav Yochanan. Now, Rav Dimi also quoted Rav Yochanan as saying, Bein ha'amudim nidon ke-Carmelite. There's areas in the shopping square, which we were talking about, Sratya Platya, yesterday, the Platya being the shopping square of the city, in which, for commercial reasons, they have these poles, not to be confused with the chifufi that we were talking about yesterday, which are poles to prevent traffic from coming up against the walls and damaging the walls. These are poles for commercial purposes, in which you hang, as very often you walk through the streets in many cities, and in the downtown area, you have people hanging begodim and things outside and hawking their goods. So here they would have flea markets, and they would have permanent poles, and then you would come in the morning and you would stick a piece on it and put the clothing that you're trying to sell or whatever it is you're selling. Or you could put your riches, hang them on it and so on. Anybody who came along could give them a little whack. And that way, you end up having a very convenient commercial center, but not a very convenient walking center. Because if you want to walk, you try to avoid that area. And since, I mean, Lamais, obviously people walk there. I mean, there's no choice in the matter. But Afagav the Darsi Beirabi, Kivin de lo Mistagi Le Bahadei. I mean, you can't just walk through it. You have to constantly dodge the poles and so on. So again, it's a restricted flow situation, therefore becomes a Carmelit. Reb Zera quoted Reb Yehuda saying that an Itzteba, Lifnei Ha'amudim, Nidon K'Karmelit. Also, the storekeepers would put out a little bench in front of the area where they were hanging their clothes to sell. And they would sit on it, hawking, and people could come and sit down, and they would have Wi-Fi and so on. But while they were at it, they would buy a couple of begodim or a cup of coffee and so on. This developed the Meshech HaZman into these little stores, what used to be a place in which if you were selling bucks and so on, ended up becoming coffee stores. So in any event, so in any event, the Itztaba would be also a Carmelit. Well, I mean, according to the Mandi Amru, holds even Bein HaAmudim is a Carmelit. Clearly an Itztaba, I mean, you can't walk at all. If there's benches, then what are you going to do? You're going to hop over the bench. I mean, it's one thing to dodge a pole, and it's another thing to hop over a bench. A bench clearly is restricted flow. That goes without saying. The Man D'Amar, that's Koshken Itzteba. The Man D'Amar says Itzteba has a different concept of restricted flow in terms of Carmelit. And he seems to say Dafka and Itzteba, Delo Necha Tashmishte, where it really very inconvenient to use that area. Avobena Amudim, even okay, fine, so you dodge a pole. I mean, but basically it's Necha Tashmishte. It's almost part of the joy of walking down the street, You keep the movement going, especially if you're on a skateboard and so on. So over there, it would not be considered to be a Carmelit. Lishna Achrina. Another way of putting that is, Avobena Amudim, the Zimne, the Darsele Rabin. when it comes to Bein Amudim, if things are really tough, then people really just flow over into that area. If there's a funeral on the street or something, they flow through the area of the poles easily. But certainly it's very difficult to get flow around benches. Okay, a different idea. This one requires dechika, heavy traffic. The other one is just saying in general, so I consider it to be a restriction. Omer Rabba Bar Shilam Rav Chista, Leveina Zekufa Bereshut HaRabim. Look, the idea of a Carmelite extends even to something as simple as having a brick standing on its edge in Reshut HaRabim, and you throw something now, and it lands on the area of the brick that is on the side. And we're going to think about how it is that it landed on its side, since probably it would have to deal with gravity, you know. But it's on its side, so then you would be chayev. So if you were throwing, let's say, Arba Amos in Rishon, and this thing lands on this Leveina, and it's within 10 tefachim of the ground, so it landed in Rishon HaRabim, and for some reason it's considered to be munach, even though it's on its side, must have had a Velcro bottom or something. The Gemara is going to talk about it, how it land on its side. So then it would be chayev, because it's considered to be the equivalent of 4x4, because it's basically facing the ground. Actually, I mean, it's a little bit of a machlok, but we'll talk about that in a moment. Al gabat batur, but if it lands on top of the brick, then we'll see, it's talking about over here that it was 3 tefachim high. If it's 3 tefachim high, it becomes a makom patur. And if it's a makom patur, you never landed 4 amas away in Reshut HaRabim, and therefore you'd be put. Matter of fact, you'd be allowed to do a lechatchila, because you can carry from a makom patur to Reshut HaRabim. So in such a case, you would be put. Abaye barabad amritav arvushigavosh shlosha. It has to be 3 tefachim high. Because if it's not 3 tefachim high, it just becomes batel to Reshut HaRabim, because everybody just steps over it. But once it's 3 tefachim high, to lo darsi barabim, people are not just stepping over it. So then, it's considered to be separate. But if you're talking about hizmi behigi, I mean, you've got now a thorn bush, a thistle bush in the middle. I mean, it doesn't have to be 3 tefachim high. Nobody's going to step on that anyway. So there it would be considered a makom patur no matter what. Chia Bar Rav says, even hizmi behigi, but cow pies, no, nobody's going to step in that. Avud so'ah, lo. So over there, even though it's not 3 tefachim high, it's an area which people will avoid stepping into. Therefore, it becomes Rishus Bifnei Atzmo, and it becomes a Mokum Patur. This is a new concept of restricted flow, let me tell you. But over here, in any event, it's an area that's not part of Rishut HaRabim. Rav Ashi says no. The idea over here is Afilu Tzoa. Even if it's something that people won't step into if they're looking at it and so on. Bottom line is, it's bottled to the Reshut HaRabim. Isn't Koveya an area to itself? On my rabbi, it should say Barab Shila, not Barab Shila. Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, now is a good time to do it. The question of why it's considered to be... No, you know, it's better to do it a little bit later when the Gemara will bring it up. So on my rabbi, Barab Shila, it should say. He also read my Amr of Yochanan. In Carmelit pechuta mi arba'a, there's no such thing as a Carmelit that is less than 4x4. If it's less than 4x4, it's a mokum patur. V'yom Rav Sheshes, and furthermore, says Rav Sheshes, a Carmelit is only to face ad asara. Now, what does that mean? It's only to face ad asara. I mean, we could understand it to mean ilema di iika mechitza asara huda havi Carmelit. Do you mean it's tofes? The idea is that the din of a Carmelite is tofes where there is 10 tefachim. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos doesn't like that pshat, where there's ten tefachim mamish, because we know all of the cases that we had before, Ula, Ravashi, and so on, all of those cases is talking about, I mean, what about the Yam, the Bika, and so on, right? I mean, we're talking about there are cases of karmeli where you don't have machitza. It's not that Ula argued that you can't have a karmeli unless there's a machitza. And that way, you certainly couldn't be entertaining that. Therefore, the retime is that ad ikah asara means you need to have 10 tefachim available in the avir. But if you don't have 10 tefachim available, whether it's mechitzas there or not, that then it's not considered to be a mokum that is choshev enough to be a karmelit. So let's say you had a bika that had on it trellises or something for gefonim, and there wasn't 10 tefachim that under it. That wouldn't that maybe wouldn't be called a karmelit. That would be called a mokum tur bi'alma. That's what the Gemara is thinking. He says, is that what it means? And that's not true. V'lo, v'omrav gilalam rabkiya bar yosef v'merav, bayit she'en betocho asara, v'kiruyo mashlimola asara. Here's an interesting case. You got a house, but it's really a chicken coop. So it doesn't have 10 tefachim inside. Outside it has 10 tefachim, if you include the thickness of the ceiling and the roof. So now, what's the din inside of that house? Our immediate feeling would be, gosh, that's for sure Rosh HaSayachid. Because that doesn't have mechitzas at 10 tefachim, does it? So it can't be Rosh HaSayachid. So what is it? Is it a makom patur or is it a karmel? Well, that's essentially the question that the way Tosef is understanding the Gemara that you just raised. Do you need a asara tefachim in order to be a karmel? And it says over there, al gago mutalat hatov bekulo. Where is that zapper?
Kulo.
It's been very active recently. A lot of mosquitoes in town.
And it's been working?
It's great.
Really?
Yeah. Did we order?
So we ordered, but then I don't know. Well, after we saw it, it didn't work so good. I canceled the order. And now I see it's really high quality.
It's not good. It doesn't work.
I tried to do it. I wish I called it again.
Oh, man.
Next step.
We were talking about that.
What about one of those little buzzer handshake things? You know?
How do I get his hand? That I was thinking of. Man. Have a little little device in the chair with like a console here. Chair B3.
We'll lose all the chashmal in the robot.
So the question here is that inside of that house, it has a din of a karmelit, and you can't carry more than arba amos. Really strange.
How can this house have arba amos be for him and be less than 10 tefachim? Yeah.
Ah. Did you ever ask yourself what the size was of those aliens? You didn't, did you?
Little aliens.
They were in fact little aliens who forced a poor earthling to build them a house or else. And this was the very beautiful house that he built for them. Wide and expansive, but just comfy, comfy, if you happen to be only 1 foot high. And no problem. Then when you go visit them, the Shailus, do you have a right to carry inside that house?
Arba Amot itself is much more than in the area.
But that's width. This thing was 3 blocks wide. It's just that it was ten. It was less than 10 fucking high.
So the height. You should have
those are two separate cases. You need 4x4 tefachim is first quantity. That's criteria number one. That's the width. Criteria number two is the height. So it says ad asar. So if ad asar means it has to have available asara, height, then the din in that house should be that it's a din of a mokum p'tur. You should be allowed to carry all over, even though it's not a rishon tayafid. But the fact is, it's a din of a karmelit. You're not allowed to carry in that house. Right? Are we clear about this yet? Yeah. Okay, so it's a very big house, but it's a very low roof. Okay, so, I mean, now the question was, how are you Megayer aliens? That's the issue.
Okay, maybe Tom Bombadil,
Because do they have a din of keeping Shabbos in such a house? That's a shayla. Does an amah go according to the amah of the individual as the amah? Problem is, these people didn't have amahs at all. They only had tentacles. So the question is, over here, it says, b'feirush, and inside that house, it has a din of a Karmelite. So now, clearly, it doesn't mean that you need ten tefachim for a Karmelite. It must mean the opposite. My v'tofeset ad asara, that if you have a Karmelite, then the height of the Karmelite extends only ten tefachim. And above ten tefachim, it's not a Karmelite. In other words, we learned that a reshut hayachid is Ola Adarakia, as we'll see in a moment, but we've spoken about this before. So Rishut HaYachid is Rishut HaYachid, no matter how far up it goes. A Rishut HaRabim, we already saw, only is still 10 Tvachim. Above 10 Tvachim, it becomes a Mokum Ptur. A Karmelit is given here some of the dinim of the Rishut HaRabim, namely that you cannot carry outside of your Arba Tvachim, But because of that, it's given also the kula, that above 10 tefachim, it's not considered to be a karmelite, and reverts to being a mokum tur, as it's ikar din. Thank you, my man.
But even has a roof.
You see? There goes prejudice again. That's prejudice. You know, you left South Africa years ago. 51 years, if I'm not mistaken, or 49 years. So why are you still so prejudiced? A Rishut HaYachid has a definition. It doesn't mean a place where you can go in to hide. A Rishut HaYachid means a place that has a machitza of 10 tefachim surrounding an area of at least 4 by 4. Does this house have 10 tefachim machitza? So, on top of it, you're right, it's a Rishut HaYachid, on top. That's why you're allowed to carry on the roof as far as you want. But once you go into it, you no longer have a Machitza of Asarat Tvachim. Correct? Same issue we had by Sukkah. Well, we're going to see some issues, Sukkah issues coming up. But it's the same type of idea. As Shmuel said to Rabbi Yehuda, listen here, Shinana, Sharpie, I don't want to hear you asking anything about above 10 tefachim when it comes to Shabbos or else. Now, what was he talking about? Does he mean to say there's no extension of Rishut HaYachid above 10 tefachim? That if you stuck a pole and it was even, whatever, 100 amas high, and you threw from the Rishut HaRabim and it lands on top of this area, it would be chayiv. Of course, later on the Gemara is going to say, wait, what happened to Mokum Arba Al Arba? This is a pole. Okay, that's the problem, which we'll talk about later. But in any event, clearly it's in the Rishut HaYachid, even though it's Lamala Me'asara, it's not before Lamala Me'asara, and Rishut HaRabim is considered to be a Mokum Ptur. So Shmuel could not have been warning off Rabbi Yehuda from discussing Lamala Me'asara Tvach and Rishut HaYachid. Ella, what did he mean? Dein Rishut HaRabim, Lamala Me'asara? Did he mean to warn Rabbi Yehuda not to ask him what the din is above Asara or Rishut HaRabim? What did he think, that Rabbi Yehuda didn't know a Mishnah? It's a Beferish Mishnah, it's not. Hazorik arba amot bekotel, somebody who throws from Rishut HaRabim and it gets stuck in a wall, lamala mi'asarat tvachim kezorik ba'avir, if it lands above 10 tvachim high, it's like throwing it into the airspace, and it's a mokum ptur because it never landed in Rishut HaRabim. It doesn't have Rishut HaYachid because it doesn't have mechitzot to define it as Rishut HaYachid. Well, again, we'll discuss exactly what the case is over here, which is Nogea the Levena case before. Lamata mi'asarat tvachim kezorek ba'aret. But if it's less than 10 tvachim, then it's as if it landed in Rishut HaRabim. So, I mean, Rav Yehuda undoubtedly read that mission himself. He doesn't need Shmuel to teach it to him. Okay. He must have meant exactly what we're talking about. He was telling Rav Yehuda, you want to know about the dinim of a Carmelite? Never discuss above 10 tefachim. Because a Carmelite cannot extend any more than Rosh Hashanah can extend above 10 tefachim high from its surface. That's what he means. Ela Carmelite. The Ein Carmelite l'mala mi'asara. Basically, what we've just discovered is that Akilu barabara mikulei Rishut Hayachid umikulei Rishut Harabim. The Rabbanan gave the two things that we discussed earlier represent Rav Dimi's case and Rav Sheshes' case represent two kulas. First of all, it's like Rishut Hayachid. If it's got 4x4 like Rishut Hayachid, then it has a karmelis. Less than that, it's a makom patur. That's a din in Rishut Hayachid. It also has a kula of Rishut Harabim, namely the Ada Sarat Vachim Uda Avi Karmelit. It's only a Karmelit up to 10 Tvachim high, and Malami Asarat Vachim Lo Avi Karmelit, and you don't have a problem above 10 Tvachim. So the two Shiurim that we mentioned are a reflection of the kula of Rishut Hayachid. It has to be at least 4x4. And the kula of Rishut Harabim, it cannot be the Malami Asara. And that really puts it very firmly into context. Now, I'm just curious about that case, which our dear president was curious about as well. Guf, Amrav Gidl, Amrav Chia Bar Yosef, Amrav. Bayit, She'im Tocho Asara, V'kiruyo Mashlim Mola Asara, Al Gago Mutar Letaltel B'kulo, V'tocho, Ein Metaltin Bo Ela Bar Ba'amot. Because curiously enough, the same house, which on top is Rishut Hayachid, indoors is a Carmelite. Says Abaye, look, if in the middle of the floor you made a sunken living room, so this sunken living room now actually gave it an additional 2 inches, which for aliens of that size is quite significant. I mean, if you're only a foot high, your sunken living room could be only 2 inches deeper.
They have one of these in a movie.
There you go. So... yeah, so there's nothing that is not berumas in the Yaraisa. So here you go, you have now your sunken living room, which is 2 inches deep, but now those 2 inches create asarat fachim from the floor of the sunken living room till the roof. What about the rest of the house? Says Abaya, the whole house then becomes a reshut hayachid. Why? My timer. It's mutar talta bekulo. My time. Have a chorei rishut hayachid. V'chorei rishut hayachid ki rishut hayachidamu. Because the din is that if you have areas that extend into a wall, let's say, in rishut hayachid, even though you'd say, aha, let us give those holes, each one, a din of rishut b'fnei atzmo.
A niche.
Yeah, you've got a niche in the wall. So a niche in the wall, let me look at it. Well, let's see now. It's less than 4x4. It's a makom patur. No. It's a Rishut Hayachid. Something that's part of the usage of the Rishut Hayachid. It's a place where you store things. It's not a Rishut, a separate Rishut. It becomes part of the Rishut Harabim. So here too, the sunken living room defines the area around the living room at least as Chorei Rishut Hayachid. Look at it as an extended shelf. So maybe the only living area, so to speak, is down in the sunken living room. But the rest of the side of the house is basically areas off of the Rishut Hayachid. Therefore, the entire house becomes a Rishut Hayachid. Not to be confused with the equivalent case in Sukkah, which Tosfos goes into at some length, where over there the halacha is that in order for it to be kosher for Sukkah, you have to have the sunken living room getting close enough to the mechitzos that the mechitzos should now be within the tvachim that allow it to be viewed as an extension of the mechitza, so the entire sukkah now has to be hollowed out, so to speak, at least up the mechitza. If it's three tvachim away, then it's not lovet, the mechitzos won't be kosher. But that, as Tosfos points out, is a completely different din. That's because you need to have the mechitzas should be somof l'schach, and otherwise the mechitzas, my mechitzas, won't be somof l'schach. That's a different halacha. But in terms of turning the place into Rishut Chorei, Rishut Hayachid, It's still all given a din of Rishut HaYachid. Where do we know that? The Yitma. Chorei Rishut HaYachid, Ki Rishut HaYachid, Damu. What about Chorei Rishut HaRabim? Abai Omer Ki Rishut HaRabim, Damu. Rav Omer Lav Ki Rishut HaRabim, Damu. If you have holes in a wall that is facing Rishut HaRabim, says Rava, it's a Rishus, each one of them has to be measured individually. If you measure it now, it's got 4x4, it becomes a Carmelit off of the Rishut HaRabim, assuming that it fills the rest of the requirements. Omer Rava L'Abaye, let me ask you something. You claim, says Rava to Abaye, that if you've got a hole in a wall off of Rishut HaRabim, it has a din of Rishut HaRabim. Explain to me, my shnami hadichi asavadimi am Rabbi Yochanan. Remember that the din that we learned before in the Braita of how to define a Carmelite, one of the cases he gave was a Keren Zavit hasmuchal Rishut HaRabim. Now I ask you, if you're ready to say that the hollowed out sunken living room makes the rest of the house the Chorei Rishut HaYachid, surely the highway off of the edge of the house or the parking area makes the parking area Chorei Rishut HaRabim. So according to you, all the Chorei Rishut HaRabim has a din of Rishut HaRabim. There's no din of a Carmelite in the parking area. But it said Beferushu, nobody argued on it. Said Beferush that that parking area does in fact have a din of Rishut HaRabim. Now you're going to explain that away. Answer Abaye, Hatam lo necha tashmishta. The whole point over there is that it's not useful. It's difficult to use that area. But over here, a niche in the house, or a niche that I'm referring to in Rishut HaRabim, by definition, what I'm talking about is something that presents itself comfortably to be used by the B'nai Rishut HaYachid or the B'nai Rishut HaRabim, as the case may be. And Memela, there is where I'm suggesting that it has a din of the Rishut to which it opens into. Now we finally get to the question that we raised earlier about how something lands on the side of a brick. Because we just said the same thing. If you threw something in Rishut HaRabim and it lands on the side of a wall, how exactly does something land on the side of a wall anyway? So asks the Gemara, what about the case we just had? It's not. Hazorik arba amot bakotel lamala miasara kezorik ba'avir dami lamata miasara tvachim kezorik ba'aretz. Now, we asked on this, when you say it's kezorik ba'aretz, on my kezorik ba'aretz, I should say with an olive, on my kezorik ba'aretz, why does it have a din of having landed on the ground, which means that you would be chayev because it was not now in Rishut HaRabim. V'holonach, if it lands on the side of a wall, then it certainly isn't at rest. How is it not? The Omer of Yochanan, it's very simple. We've got a nice, fat, juicy date. And it's sticky. So when you throw it on the edge of the wall, it sticks. That's the point. And that's considered to be... It's a pressed. I mean, it's a thick cake, actually, more. All right, but it's nice and sticky.
Is that on the wall or
on the wall? On the wall. So it landed on the wall. That's considered to be, if it's Lamata Miasura, it landed calmly in Rishut HaRabim. Now, and that's what everybody said. Now, according to you, Abaye, I don't understand. I mean, you must admit it's a little bit of a strange case that we had to be talking about Dafka throwing something sticky, isn't it? I mean, wouldn't it be more likely to say, according to you, that since if you've got a shelf in Rishut HaRabim sticking into a wall as a din of Rishut HaRabim, you could be talking about anything, and it landed in the wall, in the shelf. I mean, why does it have to be sticky? So, Isaac HaDaitach, as you claim, that Chorei Rishut HaRabim, Av Rishut HaDinim Rishut HaRabim, Lama Liluk Me Bitvela Shemina, why do we have to say it's talking about something sticky? Luk Me Bitzror V'Chefetz Tadach B'chor. Why can't it be talking about a tennis ball that lands in a little hole, which according to you is Rishut HaRabim? Zimni mishani lei. Now, sometimes a buyer would answer, because, did you ever try throwing something into a little hole? You notice that it bounces. So wouldn't sticky solve the bounce problem? So that's why it says sticky, not the bounce. So shiny tzor v'chef, it's the ma'adar v'asi, it has a tendency to bounce back. And zimnin mishanei, but sometimes he would answer him, because there wasn't any chor. Why? Why wasn't there any chor? Mimai, I'll prove to you that this was a chorless wall. How can I prove that to you? Miliktoni reisha. Zorek lamala mi'asara tvach gizorek ba'avir. Let's say the case was that there was a hole in the wall. So then, if in that case, the original, in the reisha, the original case where we had throwing it and it lands above 10 tvach, assuredly would be talking about that it landed in a hole above 10 tvach. Aha! But if it landed in a hole above 10 tvach, you're claiming, landed in a hole, but then what would I have said? If it's above 10 tvachim, I couldn't have said it's harder to get around it now, right? So it's above 10 tvachim, what would have been the din in that case? Isak dakle bakoto the itbechor. Why would it have a din of Zorek Ba'avir in a mokum ptur? Honach bechor. It landed in the hole. And this hole has mechitzas of 10 tvachim. And that makes it a reshutar ayachid, which means that he threw from Rishut HaRabin into Rishut HaYachid. Now, I know what you're going to tell me. It was a little tiny hole, and it didn't have four tvachim by four tvachim. That's what you're going to try to tell me. So, v'chit, emamat nisim delet be'arba al arba, didn't Rabbi Yehuda quote Rabbi Chiya as saying that zorek l'mala mi'asarat tvachim v'alcha v'nacha b'chor koshu banu l'machloket Rabbi Meir v'rabanan? There's a whole separate problem over here, which is the famous issue of whether chokakin lashlim. Chokakin lashlim means where you are missing a certain area. Now, Tosfos explains that we're certainly not talking about a chokakin lashlim, where we have a small hole and let's make the hole bigger. There's no such din in Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's din of chokakin lashlim is where you have the outlines of a hole, or the actual case there was talking about a doorway that has an arch. So the doorway with an arch, the area where it arches over, is not four tvachim wide. But on the bottom it is. So the question is it chayev in a mezuzah? Because it doesn't have a normal shape of the, it doesn't have a full 10 by 4. So he says over there, look, as long as on the bottom it starts off as a doorway, the fact that it arches up, ignore the arch. Continue the line right on the bottom of the door, on the right and the left. Cut the line up as if the arch doesn't take up space. So that means that Rabbi Meir only says, chokekin lahashlim, hollow something away. Okay. If you can make this out, this would be the case. The chokekin lahashlim would be right along the little edge over there. See, which the dotted line extends.
Pushes to the top of the arch.
It pushes it to the top. But you have to have an outline of the hole that you're talking about in order to do chokekin lahashlim. You don't say, well, wherever there's something, let's maximize it and hollow it out. That's absurd. Then it just brings riots. Of course, Rabbi Meir never holds to such a thing.
Well, what
there,
what
is that? In that case, we're talking about the size of a petach for mezuzah. Over here, we'd be talking about chokin lashlim to give it a dinner of arba al arba, so it should become now reshut hayachid. Therefore, Tosfos says what we're talking about over here, actually, is a norm of construction, which is why we take it for granted. If it has a chor, and you'll notice, this is very common here in the Old City, there's a lot of the older walls in which it's constructed with blocks that give you little holes, where some of them used old bottles, you know, this would have those round, they would put a bottle into the hole, pull it out. Oh, there you go, yeah. So that type of thing. You know, look right through the window. So that type of thing, what they had was, you would wedge, you put a wedge into the wall, remove it after the wall solidified, and you would have a little hole on one side, and a large opening on the inside. You didn't want people to be able to look through. So the side of the Rishut HaYachid, it was small. to let in air and so on. On your side, it was larger. There it's choking and lachling, because you do have the outlines. It's the equivalent of an arched doorway on its edge. So Rabbi Meir would have said over there, chokikin lachlin, if you say chokikin lachlin, then even though it lands in a small chor, but since the standard chor could have been outlined to 4x4, it would have been a reshut hayachid. So don't ask me why we're talking about something sticky. You know why we're talking about something sticky? Because we didn't want to talk about a wall that has a hole. Because if the wall had a normal hole, then you wouldn't have been able to say, according to Rabbi Meir, that Zorak v'nach l'malam yasar atvachim, it would be kizorak ba'avir, you'd be potter, because according to Rabbi Meir, you get into the problem of chokin la'ashman. And therefore we avoided discussing walls with holes. So since the Gemara was smart enough to understand, says Abaya, that we couldn't be talking about a wall with holes, it was asking, so what did we do? We had Velcro. So the answer is you had something sticky. That's all, that's the case. Now getting to the issue before that Reb Barnea had requested that we speak about then, as Tosis points out, the case of the brick lechora, you'll have to say the same idea of the Tvela Shemena, right? In other words, something landed on the side of the brick. What? That's tach. Tach means squish. So now, how exactly did it land on the side of the brick and still be munach? There's two approaches. It could be munach because we view the surface on which something has landed to be defined by where it's at rest. In other words, we have molecular attraction, we have gravitational attraction. Normally, gravitational attraction defines where something is at rest. So we take a look, okay, where is it at rest? Is it at rest on something 4x4? If we have molecular attraction, such as a sticky nevela, where is it at rest? Ignore gravity. It's at rest against the side of something. Because the attraction we're talking about is not gravitational. So where is it at rest? It's at rest against the facing of the brick. The facing of the brick was 4x4. That's all that I care about. There's one way of looking at it. Okay. Tosis brings, however, the Rivaz pshat. The Rivaz doesn't like that. The Rivaz views the pshat in the Gemara of at rest as by definition being gravitational. Therefore, at rest would have to mean at the point at which it's been pulled and won't be pulled further. So where is it at rest? It's at rest on the ground, basically. It's just that it can't get there. So since the area on the ground is 4x4, as long as it faces the ground, it's considered to be munach al hakarka. Now the Reed didn't like that, interestingly enough, because he said, if that's the case, then why did we have to go to all of the absurd lengths that we went to have dwarfs and people sitting in holes if all we needed to talk about was holding your hand upside down?
Because
then it's facing the ground. In other words, if you tell me that it's always gravity that's going to define it. So it happens to be right now it can't fall. In this case it can't fall because it's sticky. In the other case it can't fall because it's surrounded by your fingers. Very cute catch. You don't get it? It's very cute. The case of, you do get it. All right. Anyway, that was fun, wasn't it? It is fun. Did I finish? Sorry, let's just finish the Seder inside. So, Bana Lamachlaka, Rabbi Meir, Rabbana, Rabbi Meir, Savar Chokakin Lachlim, Rabbana Savar, Ein Chokin Lachlim, Ela Shemamina, Bekota, Dolet Bechor, Shemamina. So, therefore, clearly, we're talking about a wall without a hole. The question is, why he only said this sometimes? Sometimes he said it's because. Didn't want to say we didn't have a hole. He said it's because it'll pop back out of the hole. You know, bounce back must be because it's a small hole. And it's taken into consideration already that it's a hole that wasn't shiner. In other words, he's saying Mamonisha. What do you have? It's a small hole. That's not shy. It's the Koshin Ashram. Koshin Ashram. It'll bounce back. Elamite's talking about a real normal hole. And you get into the problem of Rabbi Meir holding it to Shetayachis. So no matter how you look at it, that can't be the pshat. That's where we have to come on to it. Tvei Lashmina.
So Koshin Ashram requires at least one dimension, four.
According to Tosafot. According to Tosafot, it works out nicely.